Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station that we're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line Tom Bethel, and we're going to be talking about a great new book he's written entitled A Politically Incorrect, is that science, Tom?
Politically Incorrect Guide to Science. Yes.
Politically Incorrect Guide to Science. I heard Mr. Bethel speaking the other day and really was fascinated by it, and so I asked him to come onto the program, because there is so much faulty science that's being put out for the American people today, and we're simply being lied to by the mass media. So with that as a background, what are some of the major issues that you raise in your book about what's going on in the world today?
Well, some of the main issues, I guess, are that have been in the news have been global warming and stem cell research and the Human Genome Project. Those are some of the main ones.
All right, fine. Well, let's start off with global warming. Now, of course, we're told that the Arctic ice caps are melting and the polar bears don't have any place to go to, and certainly the glaciers are receding, and we've had an awfully warm summer this last year, almost enough to make us think that Al Gore might be right. What's the truth about global warming?
Well, the whole subject of global warming is very complex, but the first thing to say is that there does appear to have been some warming in the last 25 years, but not an unprecedented amount. There have been earlier times in history when the globe was at least as warm, if not warmer, and there have been, you know, ups and downs in the past. I guess one of the things that is interesting and hasn't very much been brought out is that the ice caps made of carbon dioxide on Mars have also been shrinking since they started to measure them in 1999. They've got a satellite going around Mars, and it has been making accurate measurements of the Martian ice caps. And the fact that they have been shrinking very strongly suggests that there has been some kind of an increase in the solar output. The global warming people all assume that the solar activity is a constant. They just make that assumption. And the whole case is based on that. So, but the evidence on Mars, and so therefore they can blame human activity, you see. But it's very hard to blame human activity for what's happening on the surface of Mars.
All right, fine. And so I think it's so important that people understand that we are in a long-term phase of global warming. Didn't this start about 1600s or something like that?
There was a more recent cooling period, and then it started to warm again. It's been sort of up and down, actually, in the 20th century. There have been warming and cooling periods in the 20th century. There no doubt is a long-term trend towards global warming, because we know that, that we've been emerging from an ice age and so on.
All right, fine.
But there are cycles within cycles, basically.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment. Here with Tom Bethel, we're going to be talking about the politically incorrect guide. Give me the exact title once more.
The Politically Incorrect Guide to Science.
Hold on. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. I guess this afternoon is Tom Bethel, and I had heard him speaking at a conference recently about his new book, Politically Incorrect Guide to Science, and going into the background of some of the myths we're being told today by a media which, of course, has an agenda and is lying to you, and whether it's the conservative or liberal media, so much of what you read just isn't true. And we were talking about what are some of the issues that had been raised. One of them is global warming, and, of course, Tom Bethel points out, why they actually have, you know, melting of the polar ice caps, both North Pole and South Pole on Mars. So if this is related to human activity, how do they explain it? And of course they don't. They don't want the American people to know. Do you really believe that human activity has any influence at all, or is there any scientific basis for the belief that human activity has anything to do with the global warming that we are experiencing as part of a long-range trend?
I think it's very unlikely, actually. I think that, you know, the problem is to find some kind of a control experiment in which human activity is eliminated, and by definition that's impossible to do on the surface of the Earth. But I would say, personally, I don't believe that human activity is making a big difference or any measurable difference. And, you know, that there are long-term trends and changes in solar output that are causing the small measured increase that has been observed. And we can't assume that that is going to go on indefinitely into the future. They just extrapolate that into the future.
All right, fine. And so I think this is a great fraud. I think it's really related to getting the Kyoto Protocol ratified. Did you discuss at all the implications of the Kyoto Protocol and what it would do to our industrial base?
Oh, yeah. It would cause a depression. I mean, what makes you realize that this subject is so political is the fact that it's very much aimed at the United States. They've got deadlines and times and figures specially configured in such a way that the countries like China and India, which are growing most rapidly, emerging economies, are exempt from the regulations. Russia, for various reasons, is essentially exempt. So it all comes down to the United States, and this is what makes one feel that this is clearly a political, you know, operation.
But I think there are really people in our country who'd like to destroy our economy and like to destroy our nation, and they all seem to be telling us we have global warming. We'll be right. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Tom Bethel. How should I refer to you, as Professor Bethel?
No, just call me Tom. I'm not a professor.
You're not a professor. I know you're up at Hoover Institute, though, aren't you?
Well, I'm just temporarily here right now, yes.
All right, fine. Well, we'll just call you Tom then. What is your background as far as science is concerned?
Well, I did a science major actually at Oxford in way back when I was, you know, at university in physiology, psychology, and philosophy. And since then, you know, then I became a journalist and I've written a lot about these scientific issues. And that's why they basically asked me to write the book, was because, you know, it deals with a wide range of subjects.
All right, and of course, Regnery actually publishes the book. And
now Regnery was the publisher, and they're doing a whole series called the Politically Incorrect Guide series. They did one on American history, and then they did one on Islam. Mine was the third in the series.
And we've actually done a number of interviews with the man who wrote the one on history. Well, tell us about the Genome Project, and what do we really know about the Genome Project?
Oh, well, we know quite a lot about the Genome Project, but the thing is they assumed or made the argument that, you know, once we decoded the human genome, which was 3 billion nucleotides, and figured out what the sequence was, that we would be able to use this information to cure diseases. And there's no evidence, really, that they're going to be able to do that. I mean, I think it was all greatly the potential for improvement of and cure of diseases was really inflated so that they would be able to get the government to fund it. I mean, a lot of the issues that I'm dealing with in this book are dealing with government funding, really. They want to increase the funding of whatever it is, stem cells, in order to create a kind of a cushy life for the scientists who are involved in it. And the Human Genome Project is now up to $500 million a year. They started a new institute, and they've got, you know, I mean, they can hardly find enough qualified biologists to hire, because the government activity in the realm of science has been expanding so rapidly. And this is one of the prime areas in which it has expanded.
Well, now, do you cover at all the stem cell issue? Because here in California, they voted through $3 billion for stem cell research,
right,
so that we could cure a Superman, and so that we could cure one of the actors who has Parkinson's disease, who's apparently a young man. And, of course, they were on television pleading with people to vote for stem cell research because they wanted to be cured of their disease. Certainly the man who played Superman wanted to have his spinal cord healed.
Right.
And the other man, of course, wanted to, not to have Parkinson's disease. And it was such a plaintive plea. And I can understand why people would be touched by this plea. I mean,
yes,
who wants to see anybody a quadriplegic? But we hear all these wonderful stories about how they're curing mice, and is there any application to what we know about the real potential for helping people?
Well, I think the whole problem is, first of all, you know, there's been a tremendous amount of criticism of President Bush on this issue. But the first thing we should realize is that he did actually legalize stem cell research, and he did make some federal money available in a rather limited way. And so there were restrictions, and now the assumption is sort of being made by a lot of people that it is the restrictions that are causing the failure of stem cell research to advance beyond what it has. And the fact is that, you know, if it's true that you can cure Parkinson's disease and these various other things, then there's an enormous amount of money to be made by privately funded biotech companies. And in fact, they have tried to do this work, and they haven't really been able to make any progress with it. It all turned out to be very much more difficult than they believed at first.
Well, what about the adult stem cells? Because, of course, there's a difference between the fetal stem cells,
yes,
and the adult stem cells. We've heard that there have been some terrible disasters with the fetal stem cells, and some of the adult stem cell research has really been quite gratifying.
Well, I'm a little bit cautious on that, too. I think that one should not just pose this as, you know, if only they would concentrate on adult stem cells, they'd be able to get the results they want. Because the fact is that a huge amount of investigation has gone on in that area, too, and they have got claims of some dramatic cures in individual instances, but they turn out to be not really repeatable. And, you know, science really is supposed to be finding outcomes which can be repeated, you know, by other labs and in other environments. And if this is not repeatable, it's not real science. And I think that this is true with adults, and they haven't been able to get anywhere at all with the embryonics. So I would think that this is all very much further in the future than a lot of people have been led to suppose. So meanwhile, the scientists are creating this pressure, sort of saying, let's get on the government payroll.
And of course, this is what they've done here in California, $3
billion. $3 billion, and I gather the money has been somewhat tied up in lawsuits, but I'm sure it will eventually be released. And I think, you know, there was actually quite an interesting article in the New York Times about 10 days ago on this whole stem cell research problem. And there was kind of a sort of an admission in the article that it's all turned out to be much more difficult than we had expected, and don't expect anything in the next 10 years.
Well, of course, we see these pictures of the mouse, and we're told that, here the mouse, look at him, he's paralyzed, see those feet dragging, and here's the mouse after the treatment, and look, he's running around, and we don't even know it's the same mouse.
No, we don't. I mean, the thing is, I would urge listeners to be very suspicious of all claims of cures or treatment that they have been able to do with mice. Because it may well be true, they have been able to cure diabetes in mice, for example, but it doesn't mean to say that they can do it in humans. Humans are a very much more complicated organism, and so wait till just discount whatever they tell you about mice. It may be true, but it doesn't necessarily apply to humans at all.
Well, of course, you know, the media can make us believe almost anything. And somebody once said, it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is, if you say it often enough and convincingly enough, people will believe.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid that that is true, and that has been a lot of, there has been a great deal of repetition on, especially on the stem cell front, because I think they feel that if they just do hammer away at it, you know, the various people in Congress will break down, and I'm sure that that is going to happen, incidentally. You know, it's only a matter of time before Congress fully funds it. And then at that point, you won't hear anything more about it.
Of course, here in California, it was the very people who were pushing for this legislation who ended up with all the money. I mean, that's the incredible thing.
Yes.
What they were trying to do was get the people of the state of California to appropriate $3 billion for
right.
their research. And
right.
didn't you notice how they were grinning on television after that $3 billion? That's B, boy,
right.
a boiling
yeah, right.
$1 billion.
And they got it through with great ease, too.
Right,
of course. It tells you that, you know, the power of publicity.
Amen to that. Well, what are some of the other major issues that you've looked into where you feel the science has certainly been misused or the facts have been altered so that our perception of what's going on really is not true?
Well, an issue that this goes way back is nuclear power.
All right, fine. Well, let's talk a little
bit
about
nuclear
power.
We need to revive. We do need to revive nuclear power, but and everything was going well with the development of nuclear power in this country. And then, you know, there was this tremendous scare that was set up in the 1950s about fallout. I don't know whether you remember that.
Oh, I remember it well.
Linus Pauling was very much involved in that. Actually, there's a good book. A whole book should be written on this. And, you know, we were essentially, he came up with some magical numbers which proved that if you abandoned atmospheric testing of nuclear weapons, you would be able to reduce the number of cancers by X number per year. And, you know, because it was all the mathematics and all of this stuff, people just accepted it. And the whole stuff was, all of his whole argument was incredibly implausible when it was examined in much greater detail later.
Well, of course, I think that one of the most significant things about nuclear power is this concept of hormesis and what really happened to the survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and what happens to people who have low-dose radiation and
yes.
exposure to radon. So why don't you cover those things? Because that's such an important issue. And I know so many people, before they would buy a house, they would have it checked for radon.
Yes.
What's the truth?
Well, the argument of hormesis is that in low doses, toxic substances, including radiation and toxic chemicals, are in fact beneficial rather than harmful. And the evidence for this with chemical substances is very strong. There's not been a single chemical that this has not been found to be true. And it's the same with radiation and radon being a form, a gas, which is emits a form of radiation and is thought to be harmful. And the best study of this was done by Professor Cohen, who was at the conference where we met. And he just examined the relationship between radon in the ground and in people's basements. And the level and the lung cancer incidence of lung cancer in that county of the all over the United States, and he found a very good inverse relationship. In other words, the more radon, the less lung cancer.
Repeat that: the more radon,
the
less
more radon lung that they found in people's basements. Therefore, the was associated with reduced incidence of lung cancer.
And of course,
he corrected it for smoking. I mean, he disallowed the people who smoked, I think. Anyway, he concluded that radon was actually good for you. And he had radon abatement equipment installed in his own house. He'd had it installed. He switched it off immediately because he figured it was good for you.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment. And, of course, it all has to do with stimulating the immune system. You stimulate the immune system, why, you can fight off cancer and other things. So they've been giving us faulty information for a long, long time. It's called hormesis. All right. Well, Dr. Stan, and of course our guest is Tom, and we're talking about his book, Politically Incorrect Guide to Science. That's Politically Incorrect Guide to Science, available at your bookstore. It's published by Regnery. And we're talking about, of course, this fact that really what's happening is that there's an organized effort to deceive the people. And we're talking about something called hormesis. Hormesis means that if you have very low-dose radiation, it can actually stimulate your immune system and help you. High-dose radiation, yes, can produce cancer, it can produce death. But this idea it's a linear function really is not. To sort of discuss this sort of hockey stick situation and how that fits into this whole picture of hormesis.
What's that? Sorry, I didn't get, what was the question?
I was talking, there's sort of a hockey stick.
Yes, right.
In other words, if you
it doesn't
just
go down in a straight line to zero. It goes down below the line and then it comes back up again, which means that in low doses that its effect is the opposite. It is actually beneficial.
And didn't they actually find that many of these survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki were living longer than their
yes.
counterparts?
There have been studies that show that the survived, you know, the people who were, of course, very close in were killed immediately, or some of them with very high doses died. But the survivors are actually living longer. And also the evidence from, I've forgotten the name of the place in Russia where they had the
Chernobyl.
Chernobyl in Ukraine, though, they said that 250,000 people were going to die. Turned out 55 people died, and they were all actually inside the plant when it exploded, or almost all. And outside it, in the, you know, the evidence again that the animal and vegetable life is absolutely flourishing and is everything growing abundantly.
Well, of course, this is not what we're hearing in America. We're hearing about all these people who died, and never mentioning that the 55 people were all inside the building or went in the building immediately afterwards.
Yes.
But the people outside, no, there may have been a. Was there any increase in the incidence of thyroid cancer in children? Do we know?
I don't think so, no.
All right, fine. So much of what we've been told about Chernobyl, about all of these things, is a lie. Why? Because they don't want us to use nuclear power here.
Yeah,
it's all right to use in France. It's all right to use in Japan. It's all right for us to finance it. We are financing it in communist China and in communist North Korea, but we can't have it here in America.
Well, yes. The thing is, actually, it's interesting. There has been a change because some of the environmentalists are now getting behind nuclear power because it has the good quality, which even they admit, is that it does not emit greenhouse gases, which means that it doesn't emit what they believe causes global warming. Therefore, there's some of them, and some fairly influential environmentalists, who said, wait a minute, maybe we should be doing nuclear power after all. And they've begun to concede that the danger in terms of radiation is minimal or nil. And therefore, I think we are going to see a revival of nuclear power in this country. It's all, but the problem is it will have been set back. There will have been a kind of a 30-year delay in the whole thing, the whole development of nuclear power. We should be developing much more nuclear power so that we're not so dependent upon oil and coal from generating electricity. And generally speaking, we need to use the best technology that's available, which we were doing in the 50s and 60s, but now then there was this great hiatus that was introduced after Three Mile Island in the 1970s.
I would love that.
When nobody was hurt.
Right. I love that that old slogan, you know, more people died in the back seat of Ted Kennedy's car at Chappaquiddick that died at Three Mile Island.
Oh, yeah, nobody died. Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Tom Bethel. We're talking about his book, entitled A Politically Correct Guide to Science.
Incorrect.
Incorrect. Politically Incorrect Guide to Science. I'm sorry. Politically Incorrect Guide to Science. And of course, we were talking about what they've done with nuclear power and how they've blocked the use of nuclear power here in America. It's used all throughout the rest of the world, but it's not used here. And I'll never...
Well, it is used. It generates 20% of electricity. But it should generate a great deal more. It generates a lot more than that in France, and as you mentioned, I think China, they're building lots of new nuclear power plants.
All right, fine. So this is something where they've simply lied to the American people, a coordinated effort to discourage the development of nuclear power in the United States. All right, of course. Now, what are some of the other issues?
Well, now, can you tell me, how long is this going on for, by the way?
Oh, our program is an hour program.
So how long have we been going already?
We've been about 25 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I think we're doing just fine.
We're doing fine?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
All right, fine. Well, now, what are some of the other issues that you brought up?
Oh, let me see. We did hormesis. I don't have a copy of the book right in front of me, but I guess one of the more controversial issues that I do say something about is evolution and intelligent design.
All right, well, let's talk about evolution and intelligent design, because I think that is such a vitally important issue, and it's not even allowed to be discussed in our schools, in our undergraduate schools here in the United States. So what about this whole idea of evolution? Is there solid scientific evidence of evolution and the fact that the Earth has been here billions and billions and billions and billions of years?
The people who raise the subject of intelligent design generally do not question the arguments about the age of the Earth. But they do question the evidence for evolution. I think the evidence for evolution is really quite weak. I mean, they've not been able to show, for example, ever been able to show that one species definitely turned into another by examining it in a laboratory or an experimental situation. Bacteria, for example, have been studied for over 100 years, and they've never observed one species of bacteria turning into another, becoming another. So the evidence for evolution is actually very weak, some say non-existent, and it looks as though the organisms and cells are so complicated that they couldn't possibly have arisen as a result of any series of accidents, which is essentially the mechanism that Darwinism depends on. So there is a real problem here. On the other hand, if you make the argument that, you know, some kind of an intelligent designer or God can just wave a wand and solve any problem and bring anything into being, then you are essentially outside the realm of science. So, you know, the problem is how you make an argument for intelligent design without violating the rubrics of science itself.
And so how do you go about doing that?
Well, it's not easy. I mean, you have to demonstrate that mechanisms that exist, you know, in organisms are so complicated that it's not possible to observe any method whereby they came into being little bit by bit. I mean, Darwinism is all dependent on an organism building up gradually, slowly, bit by bit, each increment being useful and enabling it to survive in some respect. And they've got these, you know, the world is full of organisms which are just fantastically complicated. But one example that's worth mentioning is bats. I do say something about bats in my book. The earliest bat fossils, which are hundreds of millions of years old, have already got the radar built in, you know, the sonar equipment where they can, you know, they emit these beeps, and then they echo back to them, and then they can judge distances and form a picture of the three-dimensional world, which is, you know, a fantastically complicated piece of machinery. And the earliest fossils have already got that built into bats. So they don't quite know how that happened, because you would assume that it would have to be slowly, bit by bit, increment by increment.
And of course, then, this idea of intelligent design, how do they avoid having to say that this is God, or do they just say that it's just too complicated to happen by accident?
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't have to say it's God, but you can just say it's too complicated it looked like there had to have been some designer somewhere in the picture, or some. If you have a design, I guess you do have to have a designer.
Hold that thought.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan.
Don't we have any breaks?
No, I'm afraid we don't. We talked through the breaks. Would you like to have a moment or two?
Yes, I would, yes.
All right, fine. You go right ahead, and I'll talk through this break, and then when you get back, why, you just let me know. But right now, of course, we're talking with Tom Bethel about intelligent design, and certainly if you look at what's going on, and you imagine, you know, this whole idea of, you know, would be able to take a lot of pieces from a junkyard and have a hurricane go through there and come up with some sort of a very complicated design like a 747, the whole idea of a hurricane or tornado in a junkyard, creating something useful. And unfortunately, why, of course, it just doesn't work that way. And so, you know, if you look at a wristwatch, would you think that if you found a wristwatch, it might have evolved from something? And I think intelligent people tell us that, you know, there it really has to be some sort of a designer with the complexity of human life such as it is. And so this is the basis of the whole idea of intelligent design. Of course, on the other side are the people who believe in evolution, and they certainly cannot prove this in any way. They have used lies over and over again. We certainly know that there was the Piltdown Man. When I went to college, the Piltdown Man was the missing link. Before that was the Indiana Man was the missing link, and all of them were fraudulent. In fact, the Indiana Man, you could see this whole skeleton there, you know, and the pictures of the Indiana Man, it was all based upon the finding of one tooth. And eventually they found out it was a pig's tooth, and they found out the rest of the tooth, or the rest of the pig. But the problem is that you have to accept there's one of two things. There either is a God or there isn't a God. And, of course, the scientist has determined that since there is no God, they have to come up with a solution, with an explanation for what's going on. And I think many of the scientists realize there's real problems. I mean, how did you get from a bird to an amphibian, or an amphibian to a bird? And they came up with some ideas. I think they call it the horrible monster concept. And with the horrible monster, why, we actually had a situation where an amphibian laid an egg and it was a bird, something of the sort. And, of course, there was no basis for this at all, but they had to come up with a theory. Now, none of their theories are reproducible. And if you're going to have science, it's got to be able to be reproduced. It's got to be something that can be shown to be totally valid. And the whole theory of evolution is simply a theory, and it is based upon the precept that there is no God. And I think a lot of our evolutionists realize that, but they're not about to admit that they're wrong. We'll be back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And Tom, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, yeah.
Okay, fine. And so I certainly think that this whole idea of evolution it has certainly been overplayed. And yet, of course, our students are never allowed to even question evolution. I know when I went to school, I really believed in it because I'd never heard any of the arguments against it. How could we possibly reach our young people and let them know that there are two sides to the issue?
Well, there is a growing amount of, there is increasing publicity on this. And actually, there's a new politically incorrect guide, which has just come out within the last 2 weeks, called the Politically Incorrect Guide to Darwinism and Intelligent Design, which is right on this whole subject. And it's actually, I think I just read it, and it's got the best critique of Darwinism by somebody called Jonathan Wells. He's got the best critique of Darwinism that I have ever read, because he's got all the latest literature and all the attempts, the recent attempts to demonstrate evidence for evolution, which have been mostly unsuccessful. And he's just got the whole thing laid out in very plain and simple language. So I would definitely recommend that book.
All right, that's
the politically incorrect guide to Darwinism.
All right, fine. Well, I think it's
Jonathan Wells.
All right, fine. I think it's so vitally important that the people understand that this is, I believe, one of the greatest scams that's ever been put over, and yet I would dare say that most of our young people, when they graduate from college or graduate from high school, are firmly convinced that evolution is a scientific fact. So
yeah, right.
I just certainly hope that the book will have an impact when it gets out there. All right. Well, are there any other issues specifically from your book that you would like to talk about?
Well, there's one other, and that is the issue of cancer research.
All right. Well, let's talk about cancer research.
There's been very little. If you look at the incidence of cancer over the last 40-odd years, there's been very little improvement, except a small improvement, perhaps, due to the reduction in smoking. Now, basically, there's one dominant theory which has been consuming all the minds of all researchers, which is that gene mutations, the body has trillions of cells, literally trillions, and the theory is that when a certain combination of genes in a given cell mutates, then it turns it into a cancer cell. But they've never been able to demonstrate that this theory is true. They've never been able to show what those genes are, which, when mutated, turn the cell into a cancer cell. Oncogenes is what they're called. And they've got the people have won Nobel Prizes for discovering oncogenes, and now 20 or 30 years later, they still haven't been able to establish what those genes definitely are and how many of them have to be mutated. Meanwhile, there was a much greater problem with the cancer cell that has been overlooked, although it was the first thing that was noticed when they looked at cancer cells under the microscope 100 years ago, and that was that they have the wrong combination or complement of chromosomes. Cancer cells typically have too many chromosomes, sometimes as many as 80 instead of the regulation 46. So this has been overlooked, and it appears that some of the leading carcinogens also are not mutagenic, the best examples being tar and asbestos, neither of which mutates the genome, and both of which are definitely carcinogenic. So I have a whole chapter on the problem of cancer research and the problem of essentially redirecting a theory back onto the correct. You know, when a theory has been pursued for a long time by the National Cancer Institute and literally billions, maybe $50 billion have been spent on it, and it has been unproductive, it's very difficult to get them to admit that a mistake has been made and that the research needs to be redirected. But that is definitely the case, and that is what that chapter in the book is about.
Well, do we have any idea then what it is that actually causes the gene to be altered and to lead to cancer?
I'm saying that it is not the gene to be altered.
It is not the gene.
No, I mean actually radiation mutates genes, and it's true that if you have a heavy dose of radiation, that will mutate genes, but it also does other things. It breaks the chromosomes in half. And then when you get mitosis, which is when the cell divides into two cells, then you get the wrong, they get extra chromosomes being pulled off to one side, and you have too many chromosomes on one side and not enough on the other. That's when there is a danger that cancer can start at that point.
I see. That's a very interesting theory. I'd never heard that before, but it certainly sounds like it will be the case.
Yes.
Is this a fairly widely accepted now, that it is this damage and then the altered and broken chromosomes that predispose?
It's accepted that radiation damages chromosomes, yes, and that this is likely to be an initiating event in cancer. But the problem is they always look at the mutated genes in the genome and in the nucleus of the cell. Instead of the much greater defect with the chromosomes themselves breaking and leading to a wrong cell division. And so, that can all happen without the gene mutation, is the point. And so there are some people who are actually looking into this. There was an article in Science magazine in July about this. I think that it's only a matter of time, because it's a big deal, really. If there's been an error of this magnitude in cancer research and it's gone on for 30 years, I think 1976, when the gene mutation theory really got underway, you know, people will want to know about it. It would be difficult to keep it swept under the rug.
Well, now, is the incidence of cancer rising or falling? Do we have any idea?
The incidence of cancer in it's a complex question because the U.S. population is aging, and cancer does increase with age. So there has been an increase actually in the incidence of cancer. If you correct it for aging, it's approximately unchanged from what it was in the 1950s, I believe.
All right. So
there's been some recent improvement because of the reduction in smoking.
And certainly we, but then of course, so many women smoke for such a long period of
time.
Yes,
sir. And yeah, the women have been increasing in this. So that may, to some extent, there's been a decrease in men and an increase in women, I think.
All right, so this is really a tragic, tragic situation because this is something that's quite preventable, and it was only in recent years that we've really zeroed in on this. Well, you know, certainly after they've invested, is it $50 billion we put into cancer research?
I would say it could be, yeah. I mean, the National Cancer Institute started to be funded, actually, before World War II, before in the 30s, and then you had 1970 or thereabouts, you had Nixon declaring war on cancer. So it's been 35 years since that. They predicted at the time that the war on cancer was declared that it would be won by the bicentenary, 1976. And they've got to have spent, I think they're spending about $5 billion a year on it now. So it would have been smaller amounts earlier, of course, but it could well be at least $50 billion. Yes.
All right, fine. Well, I think it's amazing all that research being done, and I really wonder if we're getting our money's worth at the present time. Okay, fine. Well, now how can people get copies of your book?
Well, I think if they get it through, I think they can order it through Amazon. There are some bookstores that do have it. I saw. Tower Books or something had it one place I was in recently. That you can find it in bookstores, and it's generally out there. So give it a try.
All right, fine. Well, I want to thank you so very, very much for being with us. And do you have any parting thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Just if you hear a word, if you hear people telling you there's some new crisis, medical or health or scientific crisis, and the government is going to have to step in and spend another $5 billion, be suspicious.
All right, fine. Well, look, thank you so very much. I really appreciate you being with us.
All right. Okay, Stan. Thanks very much.
All right, fine. Well, that was Tom Bethel, and of course, Tom is up at the Hoover Institute at the present time doing some work up there, and then, of course, we hope maybe we can have him on again sometime, but right now I'm going to open up our lines. If you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment on anything that we've talked about, give us a call here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And you know, some of these issues that he was bringing up, I think are so very, very valid. Most people, and especially in the area where I live, are dead set against nuclear power. They think that nuclear power is the worst thing in the world. Why do they believe that? Because they've been told it over and over again. I'll never forget recently going to a meeting. In fact, it was a conspiracy conference, and there are a lot of people there, very, very liberal people and nice people, but they have been programmed, they've been taught, and there was a young man there, and of course the issue, he came over to our table to talk, and he was asking about, somehow the subject of nuclear power came up, and of course he said, well, you know, we had nuclear power, I mean, what would we do with the all the spent fuel, you know, there's no place to store it, and I said, what you do with your spent fuel with nuclear power is, you reprocess it like everybody else in the world. They reprocess their nuclear fuel, but we're not allowed to do that. Congress passed a law that prevented the reprocessing of fuel under the Carter administration, and that, of course, led all the... And some of the private industries had spent literally billions of dollars on plants to reprocess nuclear fuel, and they were just out their money. Well, when the Reagan administration came in, why, they said, all right, now you can go ahead and reprocess fuel. And they said, well, how do we know you're not going to change your mind again? We lost $3 or $4 billion, that's B, a big brawny $1 billion. You know, we want to guarantee that if Congress changes its mind again after 2 years when you come into a new Congress, we're not going to be left holding the bag again. And they said, we won't do it. You just got to trust us. And industry then refused to build a reprocessing plant. The government, which can waste billions of dollars, it wouldn't build the reprocessing plant. So now we've got a sort of a standoff. We've got all this unspent fuel, and where are we going to put it? Well, we need to put it into glass, and of course buried in the Nevada desert there. And I don't know how many billion dollars they've spent on this respiratory site. And then figured out how safe it was going to be at the end of 10,000 years. But then a judge intervened, and he said, no, we've got to find out how safe it'll be at the end of 200,000 years or something ridiculous of this sort. It is all to delay doing what's logical so that they can have a problem. What you should be doing with your spent fuel is do exactly what the Japanese and what the French and the Germans and the other. They ship it overseas to actually be reprocessed. It is reprocessed, and of course you can actually come back with more fuel that you can use. But they don't want a solution, they want a problem. Well, when I suggested this to the young man who came to our table, why, he was just furious. And he said, would you want to have a nuclear plant in your backyard? And I looked at him, and I said, look, my son was in the military. He was on an aircraft carrier. Do you know that all of our aircraft carriers are fueled by nuclear power, and they have their nuclear reactors on board? He lived right next to that for years. Didn't bother him at all. Do you know, for instance, that the submarines, every nuclear submarine is fueled by a nuclear reactor, and people are with them for years at a time, and they don't have any problem at all? And this young man, when I raised these issues, he got so furious, he just stomped off and would never speak to me again, because I challenged the very core of his belief. And this is the problem we're facing, is so many of our young people are being taught things that just are not true. And when you try to tell them the truth, their minds have been controlled. Or as Edward Bernays had said in his book Propaganda, written back in 1927, we are governed, our minds are molded, our tastes are formed, our ideas suggested, largely by men we have never heard of. And this is really what they're doing. They're brainwashing our kids in schools. They're not educating our children in schools. They're brainwashing, they're indoctrinating them with all sorts of ideas on environmentalism and internationalism and socialism. And most of our children have never read the Constitution, nor do they understand the secret of our Constitution, which is that they are to limit the power of government so men could be free, and that liberty and limited government are synonymous, just as tyranny and total government are synonymous. That is, liberty and limited government are synonymous, and tyranny and total government are synonymous. And, of course, the secret of America was we limited the power of the federal government so we'd never have a fascist dictatorship here that could monitor our telephone calls and make us wait in long lines at airports for no reason at all, and long lines at government buildings for no reason at all, and take away our toothpaste and take away, certainly any mouthwash or any liquids we have when we get onto a plane, and it's all as phony as a $3 bill. If there was really a threat of terrorism, George Bush would have sealed the southern border immediately after 9/11, which he refused to do and which he's still not doing. If there was really a threat of terrorism, why, they would have been other attacks of terrorism here in the United States. And there really haven't been. The latest terrorist threat was they arrested a couple of Muslim boys because they had a lot of cell phones. I think they might have had 600 cell phones, which they were going to sell. But they made a big issue out of that, scared everybody to death. There is a threat of terrorism here in the United States. Are they terrorist cells? Absolutely. Who finances them? I believe our government does. I think we've infiltrated all of them, just exactly as when we had a Communist Party in the United States. We infiltrated the Communist Party thoroughly, from the very highest level to the lowest level. What about the Mafia? We've infiltrated the Mafia. We have people planted all throughout the Mafia. In fact, many times we've sent innocent people to prison for crimes they did not commit to protect the Mafia chieftains that we were allowing to continue operating. And if you haven't read, we have a wonderful book we used to carry called A Deadly Deception. It went into the background of, you know, of how in the Boston area, why the FBI was working with a fellow named Whitey Bulger, who committed over 20 crimes and tortured many people to death while he was being protected by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I think that was Deadly Deception. We do have the book here if anybody wants to check on it. We no longer have copies. And, of course, we do have a wonderful book here. It's called Devil Cross. It's the story of how the CIA worked hand in glove with the mafia. But how could that be? I mean, the CIA was supposedly not involved with the mafia. Well, it really was. And they were protecting the mafia chieftains. That's Double Cross, written by Chuck Giancano, the brother of Sam Giancano. And, if you, of course, you can get the book by calling 1-800-544-8927. You see, nothing as it appears. If you'd like to give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, we have let Mr. Bethel go. I thought that maybe we'd get a few couple calls, and we might be able to cover some of the other things in more detail that were brought up. But there is so much science that is simply being misused today, and it's being misused in a way that is aimed at hurting our economy. And I think what the point out was brought out earlier is that the entire agenda behind this whole global warming scam, and it is a scam, not that we don't have global warming, because we do. After all, the global warming began back in 1600 before there was any increased CO2 in the atmosphere, and there's absolutely no evidence that the 1% increase in CO2 that we have in the greenhouse gases has any effect at all on global warming. Remember, if you're talking about greenhouse gases, the largest greenhouse gas is water. And of the entire greenhouse gases, CO2 makes up 2.5 to 3%, and it may have even gone up maybe 1%. But CO2 is wonderful. It makes the forest green. In fact, if you grow things in CO2, they do far better than if you grow them without significant CO2. Well, right now we have Rick on the line. Rick, did you want to make a comment?
Yes. It seems that our country is under the biggest mass delusion probably in the history of the world. And, for instance, like the dietary, you know, the Europe, they don't allow genetic food in their food supply. Like you said, with the nuclear waste that can be, the rods can be reused, and just the whole thing, you run down the gamut, and it looks like America is being set up like some kind of a Thanksgiving turkey to me.
I think you're absolutely right. I think they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want us to know. That I share your concern about genetically modified food. I think that one of these days we're going to find that there's some terrible complications from it.
And that's just one instance of everything. I mean, the media is completely... It's almost like I can't think of any group of people that have been so informed on so much but so deluded. It's like they're disinformed on almost every issue. I'm talking about America.
You're absolutely right. Well, that's why I do what I do 5 hours a day, and I hope you're getting all those people down there in Texas to listen to us. And, of course, we'll document or try to document everything we say here. But I share your concern. If you have not yet seen my talk on planned population reduction, let me recommend it, because it covers a lot of the things you're mentioning. And hang on there for just a moment as we go to our break. Okay, this is Dr. Stan, and we're going to wrap up the program. We have Rick calling from Texas. Rick, anything else you want to say before we let you go?
No, that's about it. Just that, to me, it looks like America could be the mystery Babylon of Revelation 18. I mean, just because of such a mass delusion and the actual hubris of the people in America and what they believe, and what they believe is based on falsehood, so much of it.
Amen to that. God bless you, Rick. But we've got to bring the truth out, because we've got the facts and we can document it. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
All right, well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we really, of course, look to you out there in the listening audience. If you agree with us, if you agree that we're involved in a spiritual battle being carried on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield, we hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And, of course, you can get our 4 best tapes or CDs of the month and or our newsletter. You get the newsletter if you join the Tape of the Month Club, or you get the newsletter separately. But, of course, we suggested gift $20 a month or more. But this is really the mainstay of how we're able to continue doing what we're doing and reaching out across America. You know, on a regular basis, 5 hours every weekday, and our weekend program going to about 30 stations, at least some people are learning the truth. So if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, let me suggest the main newsletter. I'd ask for that one, because that takes you into the background of immigration, who is behind this whole immigration scam, why they're behind it, and, of course, who these people truly worship. That's the main newsletter. I think it's one of the better ones we've done in quite some time. And we'd be glad to send you a copy free of charge if you call us at 1-800-544-8927. We have a 4-tape set on global warming. We recommend that. We have certainly a great deal of information going into the spiritual forces working behind the scenes. If you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, shame on you. You need to get it. You need to read it. And hopefully you'll even want to help us distribute it. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. You can get the video, you can get the DVD with that if you'd like to, or you can get them separately. And then, of course, we hope many of you will want to go ahead and get our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. They're only $9.95 for all 3 pamphlets, but they will give you insight into the secret organizations and the spiritual organizations, the work behind the scenes, and the relation between the secret organizations and the spiritual dimension, which is really very real. And nobody really wants to talk about the relationship between people who are fortune tellers and mediums and witches and diviners. And, you know, water witching sometimes can really work. But certain people have this ability to contact the other dimension. If you haven't yet actually read our book, we carry it. It's called The Beautiful Side of Evil by Johanna Michelson, or heard my interviews with her. Johanna was a medium. We're carrying a wonderful new book. It's called Hostage to the Devil. Hostage to the Devil. I first read this back in about 1980. It's written by Malachi Martin. And you really need to read this book. I promise you, you will never look at the world through the same eyes again. When I first read this book, it was my first inclination that there was another force out there that I'd been missing and that nobody ever talked about. Hostage to the Devil by Malachi Martin records the stories of 5 exorcisms recorded and documented by the Catholic Church. And then, of course, you get our 4-tape set with Malachi Martin called The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. You get the 2 of them together at a reduced price. You need to understand who the enemy really is if you're going to be able to work effectively. Our telephone number again, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. Remember, we do carry the Berkey products, and, of course, we recommend them to you. And then we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty. We ask you to pray for our country. We ask you to pray for revival. And, of course, until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.